Dasanas Kuf Mem Ches, right? What's today? What's today?
Pesach Sheni.
Pesach Sheni, good. Pesach Sheni. So let's see if we can find some.
Pass the tissue, please.
Let's see if we can. Thank you. Find something to do with that. Let's see what he says. V'nashlim ata ha'inyan shanachnu bo. Let's complete the matter that we are. We find ourselves in. Ki hine lefi ma shibarnu, because according to what we have explained, nimtzenu lemedim shelekol mida umida. Turns out that every mida, yesh inyan hamidahi, v'koyach hamidahi. Every mida in the world, and every aspect of Hashem's manifestation in the world, every gilui in the world, is coming in. Hashem manifests in the world through midas, right? We've discussed that many times. He doesn't build the world. The world is not built. The world is not simply a gilui, a manifestation of His oneness. It is a manifestation of the oneness between His midas. Mida. Mida means a measurement, right? Mida. The world is made of seven levels. Seven times seven. That's what Sefiras HaOmer is all about. We're going through the 7 weeks of the Omer. And 7 times 7 is 49. The word mida equals 49, right? Mida, 49. Mem, dalet, hey. Mida. The 49 levels of revelation in the world. And so the world is built on midot. If it was not built on midot, you couldn't see it. You wouldn't be able to see it. If it was one, you'd be part of that oneness. And they wouldn't. The word part would be meaningless. And all would that there would be Hashem's oneness. So it can't be like that. There must be at least two. And in order to be two, you need at least three, because two is a contradiction, so you need three to resolve them. And so if you think this through, you develop all the 10 middas that are needed in the world, seven of which are revealed in the finite world, in the manifest world. And those are the seven middas of the world. That's why the word midah, incidentally, just as an aside, the word midah means a measurement, and it also means a garment. Midah is a garment, because that's what reveals you, right? That's the outer tools of your gilui in the world. So that is why midah means a garment, and it means a measurement, because it's a measured portion of the inner reality, and it means a tray, a character tray. A midah is a tray of character. It means an aspect of my personality. I can't manifest all of me at once. You can't grasp all of who I am. You grasp the midah that I'm operating with at the moment, whether it's kindness or cruelty or whatever it is. You grasp only one midah at a time, and that's the theory of why the world is built on midah. So he says, but the world also, every midah, introducing a new idea now, every midah has a koyach, right? That's a new theme we haven't discovered before. Every midah has a power. The midah can shine in more or less. I can manifest with chesed towards you, but I can have an intense chesed, or I can have a moderated chesed, less of a chesed, right? You can show a gilui of love to somebody in a more intense form and a less intense form. So each midah has a volume control, right? Not only can you select the midah, you can also select the volume, right? Correct? Some plants you can plant in the garden, they grow true to the seed that you planted. Some grow more exuberantly and some grow less, right? There's a volume. Is that right? And therefore you have colors, and you have intensity of the colors. The seven middas are the seven colors in the rainbow. Some of them are brighter. They can be brighter or less bright. So that's a chiluk in the middas, right? And therefore, perush, hakoyach eich tuchal legalois ha'in shebuchuka. That means it is its ability, the koyach, the power by which it is revealing the matter that is in its nature. Mishpat, for example, is the whole of the mishpat. Is the klal of what he calls mishpat. Mishpat means din. Din means justice or apportioned measures. That is the general principle of reward and punishment, right? Im lechesed, im lechesed, im leshiftoi. Whether it is Hashem's kindness or His rod, in other words, mid of punishment. Nichlalu b'shloisha reshim. These are contained in three heads. Midas HaChesed, kindness, unconditional giving. Midas HaDin, which is withholding The opposite of that, umidas harachamim, which is the middle path. Ach koyach higalus hamishpat. This needs a bit of explanation. Let's just try and backtrack here for, try to explain briefly. Nothing could be more fundamental than what he's explaining here, right? So this is worth a lot of effort, and if you don't have this clear, then nothing will be clear, right? All of Torah is built on this idea that there are three middas. There's a middas arachamim, that's in the middle. But first you get middas achesed, that is kindness on the right-hand side. Then you got middas adin on the left-hand side, which is the opposite of kindness. Chesed means a kindness or an unlimited giving. Din means a complete withholding, the opposite of the two, right? Those are the two. The right hand is a giving. The left hand is a withholding. Of course, that's why you have dominance also, because to show you they're not equal. The reason you have a left hand, the reason you have a middle of limitation, is only because it's necessary in order to give, right? Don't get confused about this. The world is built and run on three lines, right? What is called in any book that deals with anything deeper, chadar. Chadar, chesed, din, rachamim. Chadar, chesed on the right, din on the left, rachamim in the middle. That's called chadar. Those three principles are what run the entire world. So they all three need to be there fully manifest. And yet you will see that it says, Olam chesed yibane. The world is built on chesed. Well, if the world's built on one thing, why do you need three? The answer is that these three are not equal. Chesed is the name of the story. That's the name of the game. Everything is chesed. There's nothing else in the world but chesed. Olam chesed yibane. Hashem builds the world on chesed. That's the only reason that he builds the world, right? You don't enter a relationship with somebody to be disciplining or strict with them. You enter a relationship, you get married to manifest love. The relationship is love when you have bring up a child in the world. There's only one motivation. That's love for the child. In terms of the love, you have to give discipline. You can't manifest the love correctly unless you give discipline. But the discipline is also a manifestation of the love. They're not equal. It's not... am I getting somewhere? You don't relate to a child half with cruelty and limitation and half with love. Sometimes you say yes because you love him. Sometimes you say no because you hate him. It's ridiculous. You don't do that. It's all chesed. When you say no, it's also an aspect of chesed. You're only saying no because you love him, and therefore the right-hand side chesed is everything. Olam chesed yibane. That's why it comes first. They don't come into the world at the same time. The first mid is chesed. The second, and that's why there's dominance in the body. The right hand is dominant. Chesed is the whole story. Din is a gilui, is a limitation of the chesed, but only so that it can remain chesed. If you didn't give discipline, if you didn't stop the chesed, it would be destruction. Right? When the rain falls, there could be no greater chesed. When the rain falls, that gives life to the world. But if it doesn't stop, it's a flood. It kills everything. It floods everything. And therefore, the rain has to stop. The stopping of the rain is a chesed. When the rain stops falling, nothing could be a greater chesed, right? To the superficial eye, it looks like Hashem's withholding the rain. But to a deeper wisdom, you see, a deeper wisdom perceives that when the rain stops, is exactly perfect. That's exactly what you need. If the rain would continue, it wouldn't be more of a kindness. When you feed a child, if you feed him more and more and more, you'll kill him, right? And therefore, when you stop feeding the child, it's because he's had enough. When a teacher teaches, for example, and the teacher stops teaching, it's because you need time to digest and absorb. If the teacher pours out what he knows more and more and more and more, he'll make a mess of you. You'll be completely confused and you'll die of intellectual obesity. When Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days and 40 nights on the mountain, Hashem gave him pauses. Even though he was hooked up to the source, Hashem just could have done an instant download. You know, it's like a 100 gig a second download. And he would have it all. He didn't do that. Hashem did a partial download, and then there was time. Revach, bein time, so that he could absorb it and could gel. So you need closeness and distance. Closeness, you need giving and stopping. Giving is like the rain falls and it must stop. That is why din is a tnai in the chesed. It's a condition in the chesed. Din isn't the opposite. It is another aspect of chesed, right? The greatest illustration of this you could possibly want is that the brocha we make of Tchias HaMesim, right? Hashem who resurrects the dead. It appears in the second blessing of the Shemon Esrei. The second blessing is din. The first blessing is Avram Avinu, right? Yeah, Magen Avram. That is the blessing of Avram Avinu, which is chesed. Avram was the Amud HaChesed in the world. The second bracha is Yitzchak, Midas HaDin. He was bound on the altar, bound on the Mizbeach, held in. Right? That's what it is. It's avoda, it's service where you bound. And in that blessing, where we talk about the binding and the holding in and the withholding and the holding back, that's Mechaya Mesim. Hashem, you give life to the dead. I mean, what isn't that chesed? Isn't giving life to somebody chesed? How's that din? The answer is because to give life to somebody, you have to carve him out as a separate entity. You have to cut him away from you. When Hashem gives us life, he does it by pouring himself into us and then detaching so that you become an independent entity. Is this clear? If Hashem shone into you fully all the time, you wouldn't be you, you'd be him. So what he does is he energizes, pours his being into you, that's the tzelem, and then he stops it. And he withholds it and you find yourself an independent being. So he's just given you life. Life is carved out for you as an independent being, right? The time when the child really comes to maturity is when the father, parent stops giving to him. When the mother's nursing and suckling the child and he's attached to her, he's not an independent being. It's when she's able to push him off into the world. That is the gift of life. And therefore, din on the left-hand side is a t'nai in the chesed. So chesed means an unlimited giving. By the way, it's not good or bad. Chesed, sexual immorality is called chesed in the Torah. Ki chesed hu, right? It means giving with no limitation. Saying yes and yes and yes in every place and not knowing where to focus, right? That's chesed. Chesed means an unlimited giving. That's what it is. One manifestation is kindness.
Is all manifestations of din then really chesed?
No. Din gone wrong.
No, but din gone right. Din gone right is only chesed.
Of course. Din gone right is the packaging and wrapping and cutting off and carving out for itself the chesed. Din gone wrong is just cruelty. It's a killing and that's Esav. Esav is din gone wrong. Yitzchak is din gone right when he controls himself in the service of Hashem. Din gone wrong is where he carves out and cuts up and chops up and decimates and in the world. Yeah, but...
Sorry, can you go back to the Tchiyat HaMitim?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
And then we add Rachamim as well, by the way. Chayim Esim B'chesed, and then we say Chalke. We add in, because obviously all three of these are in each one. In the Father, in Avraham Avinu, is Chesed, but of course we'll be born from within him, Din and Rachamim. They're all there together, obviously, right? That's a proof. The fact that it's Machayim Esim B'Rachamim Rabim. The fact that Hashem gives life to the dead. Of course that's a rachamim. Of course it is a rachamim. But it's only a rachamim because rachamim contains chesed and din. Let's just go through this and we'll... This is very important. If this isn't clear, then... There could be nothing more basic than this. And therefore, the beginning of a thing is always chesed. That's where it begins. But it has to come to an end. Otherwise, it will never be unto itself. Right? It will never be what it is until it ends.
So the din come from the
sechel. What's sechel got to do with this? Where did you get sechel from? We're talking about chesed and din. They're both in sechel, they're both in the world.
But it sounds to me like the chesed has to do not with rationality.
We're not talking about rationality. It's got nothing to do with rationality. We're talking about the right-hand side and the left-hand side. There's a beginning of a thing and it comes to an end. A line starts to be drawn, and then the line comes to an end. That's chesed. Chesed is when it starts, din is when it ends. But stay focused on the narrow issue.
Are we born with chesed, or we learn
what,
it?
What you mean, you're talking about as a quality of character? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in the higher worlds, long before character.
Higher world, I'm not there.
We're talking about the theory. We're talking about the underlying roots of reality itself. There's always the beginning of a thing that's called chesed. When the world... Hashem pours his existence out of himself, that's called chesed. And then he carves it out as a separate entity, that's called din. Then you have something in the world.
Just to clarify, you're saying by giving something boundaries, you separate, you give it a distinction from God's oneness, so therefore it...
If you don't give it a boundary, it'll never be something unto itself. Now the question is, where does that boundary come in? When should the rain stop? That's the question. That's the big problem. If the rain goes on too long and then stops, it's damaged the earth. So if the rain stops too soon, you haven't had enough rain. That's the problem, right? You want to make it practical. When you educate a child, when do you say no? How much do you keep saying yes and when do you say no? How much do you put on his plate and when do you refuse? How many second helpings and third helpings of ice cream do you give him until you say no? If you give him too much, you'll destroy him. If you give him too little, it's a cruelty. He's hungry. Right? So how do you... When is that border? How long should the line be to be perfect? If it's too long, right, then it doesn't fit. If it's too short, it's not enough. That's the problem. How much should the teacher teach when the teacher's teaching, when your rebbe's teaching you? If he doesn't say enough, he leaves you unsatisfied. You don't understand. If he says too much, he confuses you.
That is
That's called rachamim. The third midah is called rachamim. When stopping at the right time, that's called midas rachamim. Where the right and left are balanced perfectly, when there's been enough giving, exactly enough giving, and enough limitation, that's called the center of the body. The right is the chesed, unlimited giving. The left is din, that's a complete withholding. The fact that they harmonize, two opposites harmonizing together, two impossible opposites. One is a yes and one is a no. One is a giving, one is a withholding. The fact that these two operate together, neither one being compromised, each one complementing the other, that's called Midas HaRachamim. Midas HaRachamim is the mysterious center line, middle point, balance point, where both sides of the scale balance perfectly. That is called Midas HaRachamim, right? And that's where you get creation. That's why the womb, or all generative processes, are in the center of the body, right? The body's all doubled. All the organs in the body are doubled. Always two. Even though you could have done very well with one kidney and one lung, you could have done very well, but you don't. You have two. But you only got one womb. The only point of birth, bris milah, circumcision, the mechanism of birth, just like the tongue. The tongue is in the center of the head. It's a single organ, not doubled like everything else. And birth, the womb, the rachamim, rechem, the word rachamim, minas rachamim is rechem. It means the womb, right? It can't be more obvious than that.
You get this rachamim mean that you have rachamonis in
there.
You override what you should really do.
That's not rachamonis.
You have rachamonis or something.
Don't override.
I should really do this, but I have rachamonis on you.
What?
That's the term rachmanis.
Rachmanis means like this. A person needs something and you respond to his need, right? He's a poor person, so you give him. That's rachmanis. You don't give him more than he needs, he'll destroy
it. But he didn't deserve it, and you give it to him anyway. Isn't that rachmanis?
No.
That's not
rachmanis. No. Of course not. Rachmanis, what's the difference between chesed and rachmanis? Chesed, if you want an expression of what you just said, it's called chesed. Chassid means to go beyond what's necessary. A tzaddik does what's necessary. A chassid does more than what's necessary, right? That's called chesed. But it doesn't mean more than what's good. If you give a child more than what he needs as a chesed, right? You help him more than you needed to, more than they were paid to, more than your salary deserved, etc. That's called chesed. If you give him too much, you'll destroy him. It's not too much. It's more than you need to, more than you're obliged to. Rachamim is, the difference between chesed and rachamim is, chesed is when you give a person out of pure goodness. Rachamim is when you give a person out of response to his need. That's to be merachim. Mercy. You have even in English, the concept of mercy, you have mercy on someone who needs it, right? When a person is about to die and you save his life, even though you didn't really have to. So that's showing mercy on the person. A person suffering and you put him out of his pain. That's mercy. Respond to a need. Chesed is when you go looking for somebody who's in pain, where you didn't have to in the first place.
In rachamim, you shouldn't be able to tell the difference between the din and the chesed.
You should be able to see both of them harmonizing perfectly. I'll give you an example. Let's talk about the intellect. This lady wants to talk about seichel. How does this manifest in the intellect? In the intellect, you have two opposing propositions, right? Two opposing propositions. Neither one can be... Each one is meaningful on its own, but they make no sense together. What does the third thing do? The third statement, Achiyavu akasav ashlishi, until the third verse comes, v'yachriya beinayim, and the third verse resolves them. How does it resolve them? Both remain true now. Neither one disappears. Right? I tell you, the library is open on Wednesday. Statement one. Then I tell you, the library is closed on Wednesday. I'm hopeless. You don't know what I'm talking about, right? Both of them are sensible statements, but they clash. They can't both be true. Third statement. This library is open in the mornings and closed in the afternoons. Oh, beautiful. Third statement is always the harmony between... Let's think this through. Today's Pesach Sheni, right? So let's see if we can apply it. Pesach Sheni. What is Pesach Sheni? Pesach Sheni today, right? Not just today to eat matzah. You should eat matzah today. But apart from eating matzah today, what is Pesach Sheni? Pesach Sheni is an amazing thing, unbelievable thing, right? Beyond human conception, really, what this day means. Pesach Sheni means the Jewish people went out of Egypt and Hashem took them out, right? That was in the month of Nisan. And then they ate the Korban Pesach, which is the point of identity of the Jewish people. The Pesach sacrifice really is what gels us into who we are. Right? That's the point of origin of the Jewish people. It's called the Korban Pesach. Maybe we'll try to explain that a bit more. And then they go out into the desert, and they move into the next month, which is called Iyar. Right? And in the middle of Iyar, today, some people come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, we were not able to offer the Korban Pesach because we were tameh, right? They were impure. Why? Because they at contact with a dead body. According to one source, they were carrying the bones of Joseph, right? They were carrying the bones of Joseph to be buried in Israel. Since they had contact with a dead body, they were not pure. Since they weren't pure at the time, they could not offer the Korban Pesach. So they come to Moshe Rabbeinu later, this day, as they're walking through the desert, and they said to him, Lama Nigara, Lama Nigara, why should we lose? Why should we be lacking? Nigara, why should we be lacking, right? Why should we lose out? The rest of the Jewish people brought the Pesach sacrifice. We couldn't bring it because we were Tameh. We demand, we want to share in that, right? It's not fair that we had contact with the dead, especially according to the Medrash that says they were carrying the bones of Joseph. We had to do that. It was a mitzvah. And because of that, we didn't offer the Korban Pesach. It's not fair. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, whoa, one second. That's a good claim. Let me ask Hashem. He goes to Hashem, and Hashem says, you know what? They're right. Absolutely. There's no reason for them to lose out. Tell them to bring a Korban Pesach. And he made a second Pesach for them. And those people were able to bring a Korban Pesach. They weren't forbidden to have chametz. It's all interesting halachic concept. But they brought the Korban Pesach a second chance to bring the Korban Pesach because they weren't valid to bring it at first. This is ridiculous, weird, bizarre. This makes no sense. Hashem gives rules. The rules are when you're Tamei, you can't bring the Korban Pesach, right? You can't do it. If you're Tamei, you can't eat Kodshim, you can't eat Truma, you can't do the Besa Mikta. There's rules in the Torah. Now you come and you say, Hashem, that rule's not fair. No, that rule's not fair. It wasn't my fault. I was Tamei. I want you to change the rules. Hashem said, okay, I'll change the rules. I'll make a second. What's going on? What's going on? There's rules. There's Pesach. You have to bring the Korban Pesach. If you're Tamei or uncircumcised or whatever it is, you can't bring the Korban Pesach. That's the rules. Now you object to the rules. What is going on? This is Torah. This is Hashem's Torah. He knows what he's doing, right? You feel that's unfair. I didn't have a chance. Hashem, you got to change the rules. Hashem, okay, fine. Change the rules. Make a second. What's going on? Some of Hashem say, if we demanded Mashiach like that, he'd have to come right now. If you said Hashem is not fair, it's not fair. If you said it to the same intensity and the same meaning that they said it, our troubles would be over. Anyway, so what's going on? You can't make up things yourself. This is the second Pesach. There was Pesach. The Pesach was going out.
Also, it's not that they weren't. It's just they weren't in the opportunity. They didn't have the opportunity to do the mitzvah.
So, what's the problem? It's called Enes. If you can't, you can't do it. Yeah, you can't do it. Move on. You do it next year.
They're calling themselves worse, like Lamini Garon.
What they meant was like this. Yeah, what they meant was that we lost out on something that is life itself. The Korban Pesach is the point of origin of the Jewish people, right? When the Jewish people became what we were by going out of Egypt, we became a unified nation that is called the people, yeah, the Jewish people. Until then, we were individuals in Egypt, descended from the forefathers. We were not yet Klal Yisrael. As we left Egypt, we became forged into one people. What was the culmination of that? When they got to Matan Torah, it says, Ki ish echad b'lev echad. They encamped at the mountain. There, the Torah suddenly switches into the singular. They were like one person. The reason the Torah was manifest 49 days later was because they were able to form one. Hashem's oneness was able to bond with the Jewish people's oneness. Right? Ki ish echad b'lev echad. It's like one people with one heart. The only reason the Torah could be given then was because a certain number of people, minimal of 22,000 people, and as it happened, 600,000 people, they were gelled into such an intense oneness that they reformed the central core of the soul of Adam. Adam Arishan, the original human being, he was one, who had splintered into millions of human beings. They reconstituted the core of his being, and they formed the oneness that is the Jewish people, and they were able to meet the oneness of Hashem. That's why we wear tefillin that talk about Hashem's oneness, and he wears tefillin that talk about Mi kam chay Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. His tefillin talk about our being one, right? That's why we say Ata echad v'shimcha echad on Shabbos afternoon. Shabbos afternoon is the highest time of love for Hashem. It's called Raiva Deraivin. It's called the Rotzon of the Rotzon. Shabbos afternoon is the highest time of closeness. Right? Just one sec. And therefore, on Shabbos afternoon, we say Ata echad v'shimcha echad. That is the third meal. That's why on Shalashudas, Shalosh Seudot, we don't call it Seuda Shlishit, the third meal. We call it Shalosh Seudot, three meals. We call the third meal three meals. We don't call the third, isn't that amazing? Why don't we call it the third meal? We call it three meals. Because the third is when it all comes together. The two opposites, the male and female, are harmonizing, right? And that is the moment of coming together. So the Korban Pesach was the coming together of the Jewish people. The Maral explains that's why the Korban had to be all one. An animal that was 1 year old. You had to roast it, because when you roast a thing, it becomes bonded. And when you cook it and boil it, it becomes falls apart. When you roast a thing, it becomes one. It has to be eaten in one house. All the people in the group had to be one group and eat it. Nothing was allowed to be taken out of the house. It had to stay in oneness. You couldn't break a bone of the Korban Pesach because it had to remain intact and one. Every symbol, every aspect of the Korban Pesach is that it was a sacrifice. The Jewish people are bonding themselves into something which is completely given to Hashem, right? That is the symbol of Korban Pesach. And that's what made us Jewish. That was the act. It's not a thing that's sacrificed like a sort of a side detail. The Korban Pesach was like... The Gemara has an amazing discussion. The Gemara says in one place that when a person converts to Judaism, he should bring a Korban Pesach. You're talking about in Tishrei, okay? Not Pesach. You're talking about in the middle of the winter, whenever it is, this person decides to become a Jew. Says the Gemara, he should bring a Korban Pesach. We have argument in the Gemara. We don't hold like that in the end. We don't. When does he bring his Korban Pesach? Next year, when he's part of the Jewish people, he brings... But the Gemara has a Havamina. That means an original thought that a person converting to Judaism should offer a Korban. Why? Because we converted to Judaism at that moment around the Korban Pesach. That's what made us, right? The Korban Pesach was the moment that gelled us into becoming what it was, and therefore it was a definitional moment. It was a moment of conversion, a moment of becoming what we became, where we bonded into one intact, organic unity that was one with Hashem. Korban means to come close. In English, it's sacrifice. It means something you give away. Sacrifice, right? In English, a sacrifice is something you give away. It's from the root sacred, something to become holy, right? In Hebrew, korban means to be mitkarev, you come close. The idea of a korban is that you yourself are offered up and go up in smoke and become part, bond with Hashem. That's what the korban is. So, therefore, that was what made them Jewish, right? A person who doesn't, you want an example that shows it so clearly. It's the one of only two mitzvahs in the Torah that if you don't do, you get koris. There's only two mitzvahs in the Torah. If you don't do it, you get spiritual excision. There's only two positive mitzvahs in the Torah. There's 36 negative things. Terrible, terrible things you can do that are so bad that if you transgress them and don't fix them, you are cut off and detached from the spiritual world. Karet, right? Terrible, terrible punishment where a person's cut off completely in this world and the next world, right? That's koris. But there's only two things you can omit that give koris. Normally, omission of positive commandments is much less serious than the transgression of negative commands, right? There are only two positives that you incur koris for not doing. Korban Pesach and Bris Milah. Both definitional aspects of what it is to be a Jew. Circumcision, which makes you a Jew. Women don't need this. The Gemara says women are born circumcised. A woman's considered. The language in the Gemara is that she's already born with that perfection. Not that she doesn't need it. She's already had it. Right? I'm not going to go into the details about this now. It's not today's subject. But men need to go through that action so that each individual becomes part of the Jewish people. Korban Pesach is with the Jewish nation, not individuals. There's two moments of blood. There are two blood mitzvahs, right? Circumcision is a blood mitzvah. It bonds you as a Jew to Hashem. Korban Pesach is a blood mitzvah. That's why it's a bedamai chayi, bedamai chayi. You shall live by your blood, you shall live by your blood. Why do we say it twice? Bedamai chayi, at a bris milah we say that, right? We say bedamai chayi, bedamai. Why repeat it? You want to be poetic? You didn't hear the first time? It's because B'damai Chayi, one blood is the blood of circumcision, one blood is the blood of Korban Pesach, right? And therefore, B'damai Chayi, where's the verse? Where's the pasuk? Pass me a siddur, I'll show you. I'll scroll siddur. It's in Navi, no? Ve'evor alaych, ve'ereich mispeseses B'damayich, ve'oimalach B'damai Chayi. That's the verse. Ve'evor alaych, evor alaych, I will pass over you. Yeah? And I'll see you mit boiseses bedamayich, wallowing in your blood. Ve'oimalach bedamayich chayi, and I will say, I can't read this. Ve'oimalach bedamayich chayi, and I will say to you, live in your blood, and I will say to you, live in your blood. It's a verse in the Navi. That's a verse that we say at a Korban Pesach, at a Korban Pesach, we should say, we say it at a Bris Milah, and we say twice the blood. Thank you very much, I appreciate it. You want to know where the verse comes from? Yechezkel 16:6. Yeah. Tes Zayin Vav.
Can I have a look?
Yeah. In Yechezkel, there. You see in the bold?
Thanks.
It's it.
Thank you.
So, That's what the Navi says. And what's he referring to? Two bloods. And these are the two blood mitzvahs that if you omit them, you cut off. Right? Very, very harsh and very amazing. And one of them is Korban Pesach. Because if that's not brought, and therefore these people in the desert, they came to Moshe, they said, "Why? This is life itself. We're not talking about some side aspect. We're talking about being connected to you. Why aren't we part of the Jewish people? We couldn't bring it, so we were tummy. But we can't live without this." Hashem said, "That's how you feel about it. You can't live without that relationship with me. It's essential to you. You can't." In that case, here you are. And he made a second. Do you understand what this means? Hashem carves out in the world a spiritual reality that puts Pesach into Iyar. Again, it was already in Nisan. Hashem repeats Pesach for these people. That you're talking about changing the whole cosmic. You're talking about. This is Torah. Pesach is Pesach, right? It happens in Nisan. That's when Pesach happens. You come in Iyar and say, "Hashem, it's not fair. Hashem says, you love me that much? You want to be connected? You see it as such an essential? So I'll make Pesach again in Iyar, right?" But let's go into the little bit behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, what's going on is like this. Now, there's a deep secret here, something amazing to understand. Today's the day to understand it. Rachamim is when the first midah, when Hashem does chesed, chesed is Nisan. Chesed, Nisan is chesed, right? Always. Everything in Torah is always in these three. Wherever, any 3 months you look at, any three numbers, any three words, any mitzvah, always three middas, right? Absolutely, three middas. One thing, it's opposite and the resolution, right? Karl Marx, had he only spent a month in yeshiva, he wouldn't have to waste his whole time in communism. He spent his whole life coming up with a thesis, an antithesis, and a synthesis, right?
That is Hegel.
That is... Yes, yes. So, this dialectic...
Where did Hegel get that from?
From here. Where do you think you got it from?
Yeah, that's...
From here. So, this dialectical materialism, or the philosophical dialectic, right? That is nothing other than a thesis, which is the thing itself. The antithesis, which is the contradiction. Doesn't work. And the synthesis. We both end up true. Not where each one is partially true. Not a compromise. Don't compromise. Both blossom in their fullness and their truth when the third one brings them together, right? And therefore, it was Marx's Jewish soul, no doubt, that latched onto this. But anyway, so the point is that Rachamim, Chesed. So Nisan, like all threes in Torah, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, the first 3 months of the year, of course, are that. Nisan is Chesed. It is all kindness. Hashem took us out of automatically, for free, on eagle's wings. Nothing we had to do. Total Chesed. It's all done for us, right? The Midrash says He took us out because it was spring. Why spring? Because it's pleasant to travel in the springtime. Yeah, the Midrash says? The Midrash says, why did Hashem take us out in spring? Because the weather's nice. That's what it says. Why did He take us out of Egypt in spring? What does that mean? It's nice weather. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. That's what it says. What's the deep meaning of it? The whole Nisan is Chesed. The whole month, the whole notion of Nisan is Chesed. It's kindness, right? It's kindness. And therefore, even the mode of operation was kindness. Kindness means Chesed done for you automatically. So Nisan, the word Nisan means miracles. Nisan is gematria nisim, miracles, miraculous. Miracles come from another place, got nothing to do with you. You just see it, you're uplifted, they were taken out completely for free. They were, Hashem, in Hasidic terms, in Hasidus, they quote often this idea, Isarusa de la Ela, coming, it aruta de la Ela, coming down from above, right? The hand that comes down from above. It's all done from above. You are the recipient of it. And then you walk into the desert, and that's when the trouble begins. The desert is the left-hand side. The desert is the dark side. It is the side of dark forces, of death forces. Of course, it's got a good side too. Don't make a mistake. All these things have opposites in it. But the desert is the place where there's no life. And walking through the desert with no water and no life, where all the tests happen, where nothing's given for free, we have to put one foot in front of the other. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is. And the month of Iyar, that's why Iyar, that's why they're counting the Omer as a dangerous time. It's a time of semi-mourning. They got the manna for free. That's true. That's true. You know when the manna started falling? Lag BaOmer. The manna started falling this Thursday. Lag BaOmer. That's another story. Okay, you can't do with everything at once. That's true. That's true. It was the man began falling, and that's already when you enter the last 17 days that are moving towards Shavuos, which is a different midah again. Just like you have what's called Lev Tov, right? A good heart. Lev is 32. And Tov is 17. It's the first 32 days of the Omer. Until Lag BaOmer, It's 32, like one was 33, and 17 takes you to 50. That's Lev Tov. But that's another story. Let's stick with one theme for now. Today's Pesach Sheni. Let's talk about that. So they're in the desert in Iyar. Iyar means the time of difficulty and the time of din. Din means we have to do it for yourself. You know, one way to see this is, what is the zodiac of Nisan? The mazal of Nisan is the sheep. The sheep is an animal that you follow, you lead, it follows, right? It's got no strength of its own, follows mindlessly. That's what the sheep is. The Gemara says when you want to acquire a flock of sheep, let's say you buy sheep from someone, you want to make a kinyan. How do you make a kinyan? He's got 10,000 sheep. You can't pick up each one. He says all you've got to do is take the lead sheep and lead it. As soon as you take the lead sheep and you start walking with the lead, the other sheep all flock after the lead sheep, you made a kinyan on the whole flock. Why? Because since they follow, this is the class starts at 12:15. This is the first class. I don't know what class you're looking for.
Second one.
No, that starts in 20 minutes time. So the first sheep is the sheep that is, that you take that one, you've taken all of them. So Nisan is we're moving into the desert, and the month, the zodiac, the spiritual quality of the month is the sheep which is following passively. And then the next month, Iyar, is the month of the ox. That's the bull. That is no bull. You lead one bull, the other bull doesn't follow, right? No. You're lucky if you get out of the field alive. The second bull, the bull, is always the one that has its own willful strength. It doesn't follow. It doesn't flock. It develops its own power, exactly the opposite quality of the sheep. And that's Iyar. Iyar is the walking through the desert, and that's exactly the point. The first month, it's given to you for free. The second, you have to do it yourself. Carve it out for yourself. And therefore, Pesach is, Hashem gives Pesach, right? That is an incredible opportunity, going out of Egypt, blaze of miracles. The second is, you do it yourself. There's a second Pesach. You understand, it's an amazing thing. This is the power of Torah Shebaal Peh. First is Torah Shebiksav, it comes down from the higher world. Second is Torah Shebaal Peh, where we carve it out ourselves. Now, there's two types of Pesach. First time, Pesach comes down from Shemaim. Hashem tells you the way it is. That's how you do it. The second time, you turn around and create it yourself. You turn around and say, Hashem, I want another Pesach. And he says, okay, I agree. And then it's an unbelievable thing, right? It's exactly the nature of these 2 months. The first is where he does it all. You're the recipient. The second is where you do it all. And he responds, right? That's Isarusa de Letata, the hand from below reaching up, right? That's the two phases of the relationship. And therefore, Iyar is the time, and that's Chesed and Din. Chesed, it's given for free, it's poured out from above. Din, Hashem withholds it, and you've got to do it yourself, right? When the child stands on his own feet, but you give him a dependent life. On the one hand, it's the greatest gift, on the other, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Din is terrifying when you're carved out as an independent being, you find yourself alone in the forest. Then, on the one hand, you're alone, you can assert yourself, on the other hand, will you get out of here alive? Right? That's the problem of Din, and that's walking through the desert. And those are the two modes that are necessary in a relationship. First, it has to be given, and then you have to pick it up and run with it and do it yourself. And then you can move to Sivan. The third month, right, when the Torah is given, Sivan is the harmony between the two. The zodiac of Sivan is Ta'imim, twins, Gemini, where the two are perfectly in harmony. What is Gemini? What is Sivan? The two tablets of the law, Luchos, the written and the oral law coming together, Moshe and Aaron as the perfect brothers, Hashem and us as the perfect partnership, the whole of Sivan. You know, the Gemara puts this, the Gemara says like this, Baruch Brich Rachmana, it says, the Gemara says, Brich Rachmana, blessed is Hashem, Shenasan Oyraiset Lisa, he gave us a threefold Torah, La'amt Lisa, to a threefold people, Bayomet Lisa, on the third day, Bayarchet Lisa, on the third month, it goes on and on. Why? Because the Torah is always threes. The Torah is given to the third person. Who's that? Moshe Rabbeinu. Because he's the third in his family. There's Aaron, there's Miriam, Aaron, Moshe, third in his family. It's given in the third month. Right? It's given to a threefold people. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. It's given it 3-3-3. It's the reason for the minhag that we never read from a Sefer Torah unless we have three people standing there. Right? You have three people, two on each side and one in the middle. We never read. When the Sefer Torah is written, three people must be standing there. Right? Because the Torah is a three-part Torah. What does that mean? It was given in the third month. It always is consisting. The Torah is MS, the Torah of truth. Truth is always the third element that resolves the first two, and therefore the Torah could not be given in the first month, and it could not be given in the second month. It's only after Hashem does everything and takes us out of Egypt and we are born, like a child is born and the mother gives birth to him, and he does nothing, the child. He's just popped out into the world for free. But sooner or later, the mother detaches in stages. First, the cord is cut, and then the milk stops being given. And eventually, he has to stand on his own feet, completely independent and alone in the world. And that is the second phase. And the third is where the two come together and harmonize, where the person is the product of both of those. What he gained, right? What is a great learned person? He's an absolute harmony between all the wisdom that he received from his Rebbe and all that he made of it himself. A great sage is not somebody who repeats what his teacher told him. That's just a tape recorder, right? A person who can repeat what his Rebbe told him is not a student. He's just a recorder. And a person who says his own stuff is just wrong. A person who makes up his own stuff is just wrong. Right? To be a great sage, you're a person who has what's called chokhmah. Chokhmah is what you got from your Rebbe, right? Mash'adam kabul miraboy, what a person gets from outside. Bina, the right-hand side is chokhmah, what you get given for free, the inspiration you get, what your teacher teaches you, what Hashem teaches you, right? And then you've got to do bina. The right-hand side, chesed in the brain, is called chokhmah. The left-hand side in the brain is called bina. Bina means meitzi dava mitoich dava, taking one thing out from another, working with it, deconstructing it, reconstructing it. Bain, in Hebrew, the word bain means to separate and to construct, to take apart and put together. Boneh. Boneh means to build. Bein in Hebrew means to distinguish, right? Bein zeh le bein zeh, to distinguish. Why is a ben, a son, called a ben? Why is a child called a ben? Because he's separate from the father. And he builds the father. He builds the father's continuity in the world. It's beautiful. Hebrew's enough to make you from. Unless you're Israeli, because I didn't teach you. But that's what it is. Bein. Bein means to distinguish between, and boneh. Boneh is where you put distinguished elements together and you construct them, right? That's the female quality. Bina. So, on the left-hand side is bina. Is meitzi dava mitoich dava, taking one thing out from another. First you get given it by your Rebbe, your master, and then you are deconstructing it and building on it. And that is what a great person is. He stands on the shoulders of those who've gone before. He absorbs the teaching, and then he's able to develop it, and that's what it is. So you have Nisan is Pesach, and Hashem is doing that. Pesach means to leap over. You leap over the intervening steps. There's no need to go through the process. It's given for free. You're taken right to the end, from the very beginning. Pesach, Livsoach, is to go right over. And then is Iyar. Iyar is the tough time. You've got to walk through the desert, one step at a time. By the way, you know, just as... what is counting the Omer? What is counting the Omer? What is this? How do we do this whole speech that I'm giving you? Yeah, about the first is given for free, and the second you do it yourself, and then it's called counting the Omer. It's the mitzvah. What is counting the Omer? It's linking all three together. Counting the Omer is starting the beginning and taking the process all the way through till you reach Shavuos. And how do you do that? By counting. You count days. What it means is, what is the secret of counting the Omer? The Omer is, first of all, why is it called counting the Omer? The Omer was the barley offering that was brought at Pesach. Second day of Pesach, you bring a barley offering, right? First of all, it's only barley. It's the cheapest and lowest. That's animal food, barley. It's absolute animal food. When a soita, a woman who's accused of adultery, when she has to bring the korban, she brings barley. Because the Gemara says she did the action of an animal action, she has to bring the food of an animal, right? So barley is animal food. On Shavuos, you bring 13 times sifted fine flour. That's human food. You don't sift your flour 13 times to make purified bread to give to an animal, right? We call it counting the Omer. Why we call it counting something that's the beginning, that's raw, that's undeveloped? We talk, to make the question a bit clearer, whenever you move towards an end point, when you move towards something longed for, you don't count what's gone before, you count the days that are left. When you to count down, right? When you're moving towards something you're longing for, you count down. Well, there's only 39 days left. There's only 30 days. Right? If any of you remember the last few weeks at school, remember that? Last few weeks at school? What did you do? You didn't count how many days you'd been at school. That was too awful to think about. You counted how many days were left, right? You was only 10 days, 9, 8. When they blast off for the moon, it's 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. You count down. So why are we counting up? This is moving towards Shavuos, right? How many days are left to our wedding with Hashem? Who cares about the days that have gone past? Why is counting the Omer looking backwards? How many days? 1 day, 2 days, 3? Count the days left. And it's not an accident to you doing this. You're counting the Omer, which is the point of origin. Right? Why are you doing that? Why are you counting, looking backwards, and not looking forwards to where you're going? It's a great mystery in counting the Omer. Right? Why is it called the Omer? And by the way, why is it called counting the Omer? Not counting the Omer. The Omer is a sacrifice that was brought on the second day. Counting the Omer, what does that mean? You're not counting the Omer. You're counting the days till Shavuos. You're counting the Shavuot, the weeks. Right? You're counting weeks. You're counting days and weeks. So what are you counting your Omer? You brought a korban on the second. By the way, why did we count the first day? The Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. And we don't count the last day either. We count 49. The 50th day we don't count. What is going on? Another question that's interesting also. Why do we count the Omer? We say Hayyim. What do we say? Hayyim. Tish'a ve'esrim yoyim. Today is 29 days of the Omer. Hayyim. Tish'a ve'esrim yoyim. There are 29 days. That's not, doesn't make any sense in Hebrew. The right way to count the 29th day is to say today. You say Hayyim yoyim. Esrim v'tesha. The right way to say it is today is the 29th day. Hayyim yoyim. Tesha v'esrim. That's the right way to say it in Hebrew. You should say today's the we don't say today's the 29th day. We say today's 29 days of the Omer. Again, in English it's awkward, but in Hebrew it's like this. If you want to say that today's the 29th day, the right way to say it in Torah language is Hayom Yom Esrim V'Tosha. Today is the day that is the 29th. That's how you say it. We don't do that. We say Hayom Tisha v'esrim Yom. We say today's 29 days of the Omer. That's not the way you say it. It's the 29th day. What I'm saying is this, the Hebrew language, when you say it in Hebrew, what you mean is today is a cumulative 29. Hayom tish'a ve'esrim yom. Today you have put together 29 days. That's what you say. Right? What kind of counting is that? Anyway, you could ask many more questions. But the secret of the Omer is you're building, piling up the days of the Omer. That's what you're doing. You're not counting how many days are left. You're building a pile. Omer in Hebrew means to pile up something. Amer means to make a pile. Omer. Huh?
Arema.
This is Omer, not Arema. But so you mean the same letters?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Omer in Hebrew means to pile something up. An Omer of barley is a measure, right? By the way, the man, for somebody asked me about Lag BaOmer, the man, each person got an Omer. You know that? Each person got an Omer of man. Isn't that amazing? How much
it's
man?
It's a measure.
Omer is a pile. Everybody got an Omer of man. And by the way, if you needed more or needed less, it was exactly enough for you. But anyway, you got an Omer. In Shabbos, there's a law. In the laws of Shabbat, one of the 39 forbidden activities is ma'amer. Ma'amer means to make a pile. You're not allowed to make a pile of something on Shabbos. To make a pile, to make a sheaf of corn. You know they bind the sheaves together? That's called Omer Basadeh, a sheaf of corn. You take the corn stalks as you're gleaning. You go through the field, right? You guys are city slickers. You've never seen this, right? You think corn grows in a Wheaties box. That's your problem. But it doesn't. It grows in things in the field. And when you go through the field and you cut them down, they walk through the field and they tie them into sheaves of corn. That's called to make an omer. Right? To make an omer. It's a sheaf of corn. So on Shabbat, you're not allowed to be ma'amer. You can't pile up things in a pile on Shabbat. Yeah? What does it mean? Is it with food? Is it without going into the details. To make a stack. To make a stack of something, you can't do on Shabbat. It's one of the 39 forbidden malachas of Shabbos, right? It's a creative activity. You're making a pile. A pile means that the thing comes together as something that is gelled into a shape. Also, you have to understand this. Omer in Hebrew, right? You said Arema, Orma in Hebrew. Orma is not only something that is piled up. It's also something that is constructed into a wisdom. Orma means shrewdness in Hebrew. Orma is shrewdness or cunning, right? It says by the sea, when the sea split, it says ne'er mumayim. The water's piled up. Water doesn't pile. One thing water does not do is pile up. It went through the sea, ne'er mumayim. It means the waters became clever. Chakime maya, it says in Aramaic. The waters became wise. What does it mean? They piled themselves up. This is orma. For homework, you can also figure out why naked is also Arum. Why is naked? It says that the snake was the shrewdest of all the creatures. Arum mikol chayata, the serpent was the shrewdest and most cunning of all creatures. And in the same few verses, it says that man and woman were naked and not ashamed. The same word, Arum. Okay, we can't go into all of that now. But the point is that Omer is the... What's the gematria of Omer, by the way? How much is the gematria of Omer? Huh? No? 310? 310 is Yesh. Yesh means real existence. Yeah? Lahanchil oyhava Yesh. To give my beloved Yesh. The 310 worlds that every tzaddik will inherit is the Omer. The Omer is called a bris also. It's a bris. Anyway, the point is, and the Omer saves us. Haman said to Mordechai, it's your Omer, your little bit of barley that you guys are working on. is worth more than 10,000 talents of silver of mine. That's why I'm going to lose and you're going to win. When he saw they were teaching the mitzvah of the Omer. Omer is an amazing thing. So the counting the Omer means you're not counting how many days are left. You're making a pile. Omer, you Omer, each day. You don't count today's 29th day. You say 2 days, 29 days of the Omer. The reason is that they're working through the desert. No use counting down to Shavuos. Shavuos is a mystical thing, a miraculous thing. You can't do that. Shavuos is another planet. Shavuot, the 50th day, is beyond all numbers. We don't count the 50th day because who could count that? You can't do that. You can't make Shavuos happen. If you try to make Shavuos happen, it's going to be a function of what you are. We won't be bigger than you. You don't do that. We build. We take the Korban Omer. That's the animal undeveloped part of the world, and you add one step to that, and then another step, and another step, and when you build all the steps, the result happens. When you play the notes of the musical scale together, the music happens. You can't play music. You can only play the notes. You can't make beautiful music. You try and do that, you got to play the notes. Painstakingly, correctly, each one, and when you put all the notes together correctly, each of the notes, you don't get another note and another note. You don't get the 29th note and the 30th note and the 35th. You get a thing called music. That's the only way to approach transcendence in the world is through the finite steps of the world. You can't leap off into another planet. You can't leap off into another. What you do is you take the first day of the Omer. The reason we don't count the first day, by the way, is because Hashem does that, of course. First day of Pesach comes from another place. Pesach means he takes you to the 50th level for free. And he says, get the idea? Right, now you start. Second day. Bring the Korban Omer, the animal thing. The animal is there. You know, it's very beautiful. What is the process of the Omer? It's counting, creating time, right? You're moving through time. You're moving through time. How much is the gematria of Zman in Hebrew? How much is Zman? No? 97. How much is Behema plus Adam? How much is that? Adam is 45. How much is Behema? Behema. 97. So you see, Zman, the creation of time, which is what the Omer is, the building of a period of time. The Gemara says it's like a year. Going from Pesach to Shavuos, a person, has an opinion in the Gemara that in the next world a person needs to go to Gehenim for a year. A whole year of Gehenim to be Metakanim. There's opinion in the Gemara, as long as it's from Pesach to Shavuos, it's fine, it's like a year. That's Zman. A whole cycle of Man is from Pesach to Shavuot. That 7 times 7 is what it is, right? Zman is Behema Adam. The Korban, the animal food that you start with, which is Behema, you go out of Egypt as an animal, not human development, and you move through 49 days till you get to Adam, which is the human form as it should be, animal food, human food, and the Behema plus Adam is Zman, which is being formed by the Omer, right? And therefore, you're making a pile.
Is what you pull the
bear off. Okay. That is the counting of the Omer, and therefore, what you're doing is in the Omer, you're putting all three elements together. In the Omer, you're moving through the 3 months and uniting them. The third month of Sivan is not a third month, it's the first 2 months coming together. You can only get to Sivan because Hashem gave you a Pesach in the beginning. You carved out your own Pesach as a response in the second month. That's Din. First is the giver is giving in the month of Nisan. The receiver is receiving actively in the month of Iyar. First is the hand that comes from above, and then our hand reaches up from below. That's Midas Adin. So first is Chesed, Hashem does it all in the month of Nisan. Then comes Iyar where we do it all, and he steps back. And that's the difficult and dangerous time, right? Exact opposite. And Chesed and Din come together, that's the month of Sivan, which is the month of Rachamim, where the Torah is given. What is the Torah called? Rachmana. Rachmana. The Torah is called Rachmana. Not the Torah is called Amar Rachmana. Amar Rachmana. The Torah said Rachmana. What's the Torah called? The Torah is called Rachmana, right? It is the Rachamim of these two coming together. And therefore, that's the process of the Omer. That's what he's introducing here by the theme of Chesed and Din and Rachamim. He's telling you that there's three qualities in the world, and nothing could express them better than Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, the 3 months we're going to through, which is the piling up of an Omer, so that in the end it is all the elements coming together. You're not counting each day of the Omer. You're adding another day to the pile. That's what you're doing, right? By the way, the word Shavuot, why do we count weeks as well as days while we're on the subject? Mitzvah lemimni yomi, mitzvah lemimni shvui, the Gemara says. It's a mitzvah to count the days and a mitzvah to count the weeks. What do? We say, Hayom tisha v'esrim yoim sheheim arva ashavoi. We say, we count the days and then we count the weeks. What does that mean? The whole idea of Omer is to build weeks. Shavuot is called weeks. It's a festival called weeks. By the way, why is it called weeks? It's not weeks, it's the end of a process. Shavuot is all the weeks have come. Shavuot, you know, it's the only festival in the calendar that has no date. The Torah gives no date for Shavuot. There's no date. It could be any day. It could be in the 6th of Sivan, it could be the 7th of Sivan, it could be... The date of Shavuot is 50 days after Pesach. That's the date. Every other festival has a date. Pesach is the 15th of Nisan. Shavuot is not the 6th of Sivan. Not at all. It happens to be, but that's not the point. Shavuot is 49 days past after Pesach, you get the Shavuot. All it is the result of the weeks. Now, what does a week mean in Hebrew? A week in Hebrew, Shavuot, means the pattern of reality. The seven, Shavuot in Hebrew means Shava, seven. Seven is always the elements of the natural world, right? Why in Hebrew is an oath called a Shavuot? A Shavuot. You're doing sevens. Yeah, you make an oath, right? I promise you I'll meet you at 11 o'clock, right? You make a Shavuot. And that's called, you made seven. What's going on? There are two mysteries about the word shvu'ah in Hebrew. Right? One is what it's got to do with seven, and why we always say it in the passive. Ani nishba. Why? You can say shaveh. Most Hebrew words can be said in the active, which is the natural way to say it. You say the passive? Nishba. There are a few amazing words like that, right? The word mitpalel is amazing. It means I do it to myself. But why do you phrase this in the passive? Aninishbati, right? We are mushbav omed. Why every Jew is obliged to keep the Torah? Because anachnu mushbay, we are mushbav. We are under oath. And when a child is born, just before he's born, they make him take an oath. You know that? Just before a child is born, the Medrash says, the Gemara says, he has to take an oath to swear to be good and not to be evil. As a child's born, just before he's born, right? He's forced to make an oath that he will be good and not be evil, and he takes that oath, and he's born into the world. And that's the reason you're obliged in mitzvahs, is because you made an oath at Sinai. And that's called nishba, mushba vomen. It's always phrased in the passive. Why? I make an oath. Ani shavea. What is it? Nishba. But the secret is this. The definition of reality is seven. That's what it means. The world is seven. By the way, the two coming together, you see very clearly, when Avram Avinu was involved in making an oath, do you remember the covenant he made in Beersheba? So it says, because Sham Nishbu Shneim, they made an oath, and because he gave him seven cows, or sheep, what was it? He gave him seven sheep, right? The Torah itself tells you that the act of making an oath was in a place called Beersheba. Why is it called Beersheba? Why is it called seven? Beersheba, why is it called that? It's the southern border of Israel, by the way. Biblical boundaries, that's where it ends, right? It's because at that place they made a shvua and he gave him seven animals. The Torah is telling you clearly that the two words are connected. And the reason is because the world has seven levels, seven midot. We began talking about the midas, right? The world has seven midas. That's reality. When you make an oath, you make yourself subject to the true reality. To be mushba means I put myself under. That means you're under oath. Even in English you say that. What do you mean you're under oath? Where's it hanging over you? It means that you mushba. Nishba means I make myself subject to the way the world is. You can't get out of that. Something I make up myself. I can make it up this way today. I can change it tomorrow. When you nishba, you swear to somebody, it means as the world is true, as facts are in the world, that's how I will be. When you make a shvur, you're putting yourself under. What do you mean when you make a shvur? That you will not move aside from the agreement. That means you will now accord with your agreement as the facts in the world accord the truth. That's what you mean. So to be nishba means, and that's why it's in the passive. The reason an oath is seven is because you're now making yourself part of the manifest world, and the world is the way it is. You can't choose that. You can't move that around. And second, you say it in the passive because you mean I'm now bound by this thing. It binds me. I now have to fit in with the truth. There's a certain definition of truth the way it is. I now cannot move out of that. I'm now bound by it. I haven't caused it to be. I've locked myself in to the system the way it must be. And that's why in Hebrew, sheva. Ma? No. That's right. That's different. Then you break out beyond the system. But that is why Be'er Sheva. Next time you go to Be'er Sheva, you'll remember write the meaning of the word seven and the word savea in Hebrew also. What is savea? Savea means to be completely full. Savati, to be completely full. What is savea? It means you've got all seven elements of reality. That's why you're full. If you had only six, you wouldn't be full. Shmone means you've got more than full. Shaman. Yes.
Where do we reconcile the 7 and the 12? Because those are 12 convert us on reality.
What about 10? What about 13? What about 49? They're all different expressions of the same system, right? Each one is looking at the system at a new level of expression. Yeah, 7. The cube has 6 sides. The 7th is the center that 13, 12 and 13. The cube has 12 lines. And the 13th holds them together. It's at a more detailed level of expression, right? You can
that's a more detailed level.
Yes, 50 is like 8. You have 7 times 7 is 49. The 50th is like the 8th that goes beyond. That needs more. But that is why you are... What are we talking about? Sure. Savea. Savea is to be... What is Savea got to do with 7? Right? Achalnu.